Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I'm joined by Graham Nichols and Mark Ventham, both pastors of Christ Church, Haywards Heath. Music is one of those things that can bring people together and cause division in one foul swoop. But whatever your taste when it comes to music, what we can all agree on is that music and singing are one of the core ways we worship God, both in church life and as individuals. The power of music is undeniable, and when we're singing truth to music, then all the more so. But what happens when the lyrical content of a song is less edifying? How should Christians approach listening to non-Christian music? All this and more on today's episode of Ordinary.
My name is Graham Nichols.
And I'm Mark Ventham.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. This week on the podcast, we're talking about music and music in church, Christian music, maybe Christians in art in general. And we're going to have a discussion about that. It's going to be really good. But before that, I want to ask the guys, summer's just finished. How was your summer?
My summer was good. I had a few weeks off and enjoyed some of that with some family members, some of it with just my wife, Caroline. And that was great. We were in England this year. Sometimes we try and get to France, but we're in England, so the weather was a bit variable. But apart from that, it was good. Mm. And actually listened to a lot of music while I was away. Tried to listen across lots of radio stations as well. So
Christian or just generally?
Generally. Mm-hmm. A lot of Radio 1, Radio 2, just because I knew I had a sermon coming up to do with music. I was listening quite a lot to hear what was going on. So it was both a holiday, but it was also a little bit educational.
Brilliant.
So, and I get really into lyrics and stuff as well. I'll mention in a minute.
Yeah, okay. Mark, did you have a good summer? What did you get
up to? It was good to hang with the family, had some time, just the four of us, which was good. We headed to Spain, to Barcelona. So we were hanging out there. We were really seeking to see as many La Liga football stadiums as we can.
Okay, that sounds boring.
Well, you've got two boys who love football, that's what you do, and a father. So this is how we do it. We go, we see the stadium, and then we get to other cultural stuff as well from the outside.
Yeah, I think holidays are really important, not because it's kind of how we survive the rest of life. So I don't think holidays are great for saying, I've just got to get a holiday, otherwise I'm going to not survive. And because that probably means the rest of your life is too busy. But
yeah.
I think as a sort of, particularly in families, as a moment of kind of reconnecting and kind of making memories and building relationships, I think it can be a really important time. And I know when my family were young, I was working quite long hours, some weeks anyway, and it was a real kind of reconnection time. And my kids really remember holidays probably more than they remember me being around some of the weekdays.
I think that's it. That is the joy, isn't it? You create the memories. Me and the boys headed to the water park. We got the memories of going down the scary rides. Well, they're scary for us, probably for many people. They're not scary at all. But, we have that memory.
Yeah,
you get
injuries and little disasters and car breakdowns and stuff. It's just...
We have many of all of that. Not car breakdowns, injuries. But, yeah.
Yeah.
It's all good fun.
Yeah.
It's all part of the joys.
And what about yourself, Josh?
Yeah, I had a nice summer. We went to Bath. My wife and I, we'd love Bath. I'd like to live there one day. It's quite expensive, though. And I don't know how we do Ordinary, so actually forget that. I'm staying there. And then we went to Centre Parks.
Which one?
Longleat.
The safari.
Yeah, although we didn't go to the safari, but we have done that in the past.
Okay.
But yeah, I love Centre Parks. It's like my favourite holiday.
Why do you like Bath? I like Bath, but might be for the same reasons.
I don't know. I think I just like it because it was one of those holidays where we booked it. Like the first time we went, it was kind of last minute. We're like, oh, we'll go away to Bath for a quick weekend. And I wasn't expecting anything. And I had like the best time there. And so I've just attached memories of complete joy and relaxation to that city, even though it's probably quite arbitrary what city it was.
Yeah.
But I just really enjoyed my time there. And so every time I go back, I just feel relaxed.
I think it's true about lots of holiday destinations.
Yeah.
It's like probably Centre Parks kind of gains a sort of attraction. There's not so much to do with the facilities.
Other parks of that nature.
No, but it's you might think Centre Parks is all to do with what's there, But I think it's partly to do with, if you go back a few times, it just becomes, this is what we do.
Yeah.
And there was a particular place, Tintagel in North Cornwall, that we went to
yeah.
loads of times as a family. And I've noticed my children are taking other people there and saying, you know, this is where we've got to go.
Yeah.
And I was talking to someone else in the church who goes to somewhere in Wales, and it's like, that's the place they've always been.
Yeah.
So it's not so much that this is superior to all other places. No. It's just, it builds a kind of, that's where we go. It's a bit like you and Bournemouth, Mark.
Yeah,
you know, and no one would say Bournemouth is particularly superior, but you just like it because you've been there a lot, and it becomes the place we go.
Well, it's got family connections as well. There is the place we go. Yeah, we hang there with the wider family this summer as well, so that was good.
And it's kind of familiar. You kind of get there and you know where everything is.
It's all about the beaches.
Yeah, but you also kind of look at things and you say, oh, that's changed. And that wasn't there last time we were here and all that sort of thing.
We often head to Bournemouth. Do love Bournemouth.
We're almost doing a podcast on holidays.
Yeah, this has got out of hand.
In the way you would move to Bath, we'd move to Bournemouth.
Right, okay. Yeah. Let's do
would
it.
Would you?
Yeah.
Ooh, interesting.
Well,
although practically whether that would work out with caring for wider family, etc., may not work. But
no. Well, let's move them all down there.
Let's move them all down there.
Put a big house in Bournemouth.
This is such a rabbit hole now. It's unbelievable.
Well, you started.
Yeah, I want to go to North Cornwall, but sweet. Church scene's not great and not many people live there. And it's a long way away from
anybody else. Seems like we need to plant a church down there.
Well, yeah. No, I think we need to plant one.
Do ordinary through Skyping.
Need to plant one in Taunton first.
Right, Graham.
Yes.
Can you please tell us about some emails we've had? Because I know we've had some emails through from some listeners and we want to mention a few, right?
Yeah. Really appreciate you sending in emails. So keep doing that and engaging in any way you want on Twitter or Facebook or on our website by making comments on that. So that'd be great. We had one email that said, enjoyed the one on singleness, but could we do one on dating? So we're thinking about that. We had another email from somebody who enjoyed the one on anger, but could we look at something generally on mental health? And we're probably going to do that in a few weeks' time when we've got a guest on called Tim Lane. But if we don't do it then, we'll do it sometime. And we're going to work through some other sort of mental health related issues over the next few weeks. So just to answer that, we had one from somebody who was asking about books. And they were saying, because we did one on books a few weeks ago, and they were saying, have you got any recommendations for books about church history? And Mark, have you got any recommendations for books about church history?
Well, the one we do a discipleship course for folks, and part of that discipleship course is reading church history. And the one we recommend is Bruce Shelley's Church History in Plain English, something like that, or Plain Language. Yeah, you caught me off guard. I didn't know you were asking me those questions, otherwise I'd have brought the book and remembered it.
Isn't there a book called Church History?
Yeah, it's called Church History in Plain Language.
In Plain Language by Bruce Shelley. Shelley.
Right, there you go, we got there in the end. Yeah. And the other one for teenagers and those kind of ages, we're doing a little bit with our boys, is Trial and Triumph. I think it's the guy's called Hanana, something like that, Hanuna, I think it is. And that's good. It's just very short snippets of guys, of key people in the life of the kind of history of the church.
Yeah, there's an older book called Sketches from Church History by S.M. Houghton, which someone in our church mentioned to me recently, and I remembered it is good. It's got lots of pictures in as well.
Yeah.
I enjoyed flicking through that. You don't like it so much?
I think it's all right. I mean, I haven't read it, to be fair. I've just seen it. I've got a copy of it, looked at it.
Yeah.
It looked a bit dated to me, if I'm honest.
I think it is dated, yeah. But I think, the production values are not high. I'll give you that. But actually, the content and the pictures are very nice. I enjoyed reading it. I think I enjoyed reading it because it's very compressed. So you feel like you can kind of flick through it in a very short period of time and get the whole of church history.
Mike Reeves has produced some stuff recently. Especially around the Reformation stuff. His stuff is readable.
But yeah, but I think the good thing about the sketches is that it was the whole of church history in one little book.
That's the thing.
We mentioned to...
there's the four-volume collection by, is it Needham?
Nick Needham.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is called... What is it called?
I think it's different things, isn't it? The different...
it's called 2,000 Years of Christ's Power is the overall name of the series, and then they've got individual names for the individual bits. But yeah. So anyway, thank you for all those emails, and keep them coming in.
Lovely. And the email address is?
ordinary@cchh.org.uk.
Org. Yeah, perfect. So do get in touch. We'd like to hear from you. Today, now we're going to get on with music, right?
We are.
You did a sermon on music recently, or singing. Is music or singing? It was about singing a lot of the time.
It was about Exodus 15, really. Actually. One of the first songs in the Bible.
Is that why we're doing this podcast, Graham?
Partly because of that. Mind. Partly because of that, and partly because kind of the reaction to that sermon was many and varied. In that it kind of stirred up, particularly in the discussions we had on a few days afterwards at a community group, stirred up kind of lots of issues of preferences, but also lots of people thinking about both what they listened to, what they sung, what they thought about, kind of what their priorities were, stuff about taste and all that kind of thing. So yeah, so I thought it was worth talking about for a few minutes. Uh-huh. So yeah, so I'll say a few things, I guess, and...
And then we just get Josh to sing a song or two. jump like into a pre-live live band.
I think the first thing, it was a bit of an unusual sermon because we normally go kind of straight to the text, but there was a bit more of a cultural overview, which was to say that in our culture, like pretty much every culture at all times, singing has been significant in some way. I suppose there's peculiarities of our culture that there's so much music coming at us from kind of all angles. There's always been, I suppose, kind of highbrow music and folky music. There's always been people gathering around campfires and singing and stuff. But I suppose that was a slightly smaller set of well-known songs often then. And nowadays you've got lots and lots of songs coming at you. But you've got the same basic idea that music and the words associated with music in songs gets into your head. And that's kind of happening now. And obviously music is big business for us now, which probably hasn't been in previous cultures, previous times in history. So music is massive business. So getting music in your head and getting music bought is a big thing. So into this sort of big cultural cauldron, if that's the right word, you've got Christian music and the place of Christian music, and you know, should it be the same? Should it be different? Kind of how does it fit? And those kind of thoughts. In particular to do with popular music, probably more so than sort of classical non-words based music or kind of historical songs and stuff. The thing about current popular music is there is an emphasis on relationships and sex, which is prevalent. It is noticeable. You know, there are songs about other stuff. There are sort of the occasional protest song or social comment song, but really not very many. Social comment might happen sort of in passing, but pretty much all songs are about love, relationships, sex, disappointment, you know, just few around the periphery of that to do with friends. But
do you think it's always been like that? Like, as you said that, I was thinking, as I'm listening to some of the stuff, you know, that my family, children are listening to at times, you suddenly catch the thinking, oh, you know, you can't listen to that. It's just not. And it made me think, was it like that when I was a kid, you know, as a teenager? Was it as, it seems to me that it's changed or shifted or... Or is that just me suddenly growing up and maturing and going, oh, I now understand what you're singing about?
I think it has slightly... It
seems a lot more explicit to me and a lot more...
Is it similar to the TV thing that we've talked about? Have we talked about in the past on the podcast where the threshold has lowered in terms of what is now acceptable and permissible on screen? Is that the same kind of principle in music?
I think so. There's a little, by the way, comment that YouTube has meant that explicit lyrics and stuff is not so censored. So on radio, you still go on radio edits of songs that have got swear words cut out, whereas on YouTube videos, generally they're not. So that whole thing, YouTube has meant that you've got a sort of what started with kind of MTV, if you remember MTV, where you started having music videos on the television, you know, a whole channel associated with that. Now you've just got constant streaming of music videos, and music videos often reinforce in some way the kind of sexual element of a song. So if you look at music videos, nearly all of them have got blokes and girls dancing around, cavorting. Now that's basically, it might sound like an old man, but I mean that's just how they are. You know, pretty much all of them, you know, there's very few that have, you know, a singer on a stage singing or some other little drama going on. Very few that have that. You know, most of them have the working through stages of either a little kind of mini drama that involves boy, girl or something else, or you get some sort of, you know, loads of dancers and a bloke singing, girl singing, loads of dancers. You know, it kind of just keeps shifting. So I think that's probably changed the the kind of lack of ambiguity in some of the songs. So when when we were growing up, there were songs that were basically about sex. So you can, I was thinking about this the other day to do with, okay, so what was I listening to when I was younger? What was on the radio? There was, you know, Rod Stewart say, singing about hot legs or Tonight's the Night or something like that. You know, or there was, you know, a little bit later, you know, Duran Duran doing various kind of love songs. But it was all a little bit, it was kind of obvious that, okay, so these guys are in a relationship and they're going to have sex or whatever. But it was a little bit, just a little bit one step back from it. Sure. And it wasn't sort of so much, and you could kind of sing along a little bit.
More subtlety in the...
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that better? I mean, I don't know.
No, I don't know.
I mean, what are you? What's your point? Is your point? So are you leading up to a comment to say you should stop listening to all this music?
No, I think I was in the sort of overviewing. That was a bit of an aside, really, about whether it's changed. I think where it is now is that there is a lot of lyrical content in songs and the sort of videos that kind of back them up, which is putting forward a kind of a postmodern. Sex and relationships are an interesting topic, and it's all a bit vague as to what level of commitment or sort of deeper relationship is looked for in this, and we should just sort of tolerate that and sort of go along with that. So that's a kind of an ethic, that's an ideology, and the lyrics are part of that. And my only observation really was to say there's loads of this stuff going on and it does get in our heads. So it's at least worth thinking about what's mostly in our heads and is it okay? I mean, there is an argument to say that you know, kids, grown-ups can sing along with songs without thinking about it. So it doesn't really matter. It's just, it's almost part of the music, the words. And so you're saying words, but you don't engage with the words. But I think you can only push that argument so far. If that's all that's going on in your head, I think it's worth kind of thinking about. So that's the sort of cultural context. So into that, Christians sing. So because everyone else is singing and listening to music and singing music and creating music, Christians do that. And I suppose you've got sort of a few things to think about. One is to think about the actual topic of what we listen to. The other is to think about whether we put something into that creative area in terms of singing and music and songs and words. And the third thing is kind of what we do when we gather together as church. So those are three things worth talking about for a few minutes. So let's do them in reverse order because it's easier. The first topic, which kind of connects with what we were talking about in Exodus, was Christians sing because everyone else is singing. So Christians sing. And I think the topic, for Christians to sing about is salvation. So Moses and those guys sing about salvation. At the end of the Bible, they're still singing about salvation. And at all points in between, they're singing about salvation. But you get other topics around salvation that come in, which are to do with, this is a difficult experience I'm going through, and I'm struggling. So there are songs that are more prayers. There are praising God sort of more generally for his great power in creation. There are songs that kind of observe the history of how God has worked in salvation, but also kind of helping us in various ways. So the sort of repertoire extends through the Bible, but they're all surrounding salvation. They're all kind of in a way as a result of salvation and a result of understanding God. So I think because music and singing is so important and it gets in our heads and it's part of our culture, we should sing a lot.
I mean, I was just thinking about that. Singing is obviously so important that God's given us a whole book of the Bible, which are just songs.
Yeah.
And another book, which is the recording of a love song, which we're beginning to study at Christchurch. So there's quite a lot about songs. So then you've got to ask the question, not just how do we engage because of the culture, but why did God so give songs?
Yes.
You know, why is it so important? What does it do? How does it resonate with our...
Yeah.
Who we are, and partly is it, there's something, isn't it? As I sing, not only does it lift me to my eyes heavenward, but it's kind of, it is a means of which God has given us, in which I can rehearse truth to myself in a way that somehow it gets into me in a way that other things don't. or truth gets in. So obviously over the centuries, ways in which the church would have taught, particularly when there was reading wasn't that people couldn't read as well, illiteracy was higher, you would have songs, people would sing hymns, and they're singing the hymns, they're singing their of their salvation story, and they're rehearsing truth, and they would learn deep theology through much of what they sung. Now, one of the down things, you know, and that's one of the big arguments, isn't it? Why do we need to sing more traditional hymns? And often the traditional hymns are rich in theology, and they're deep, and sometimes as you sing them, you feel like you're wading through a kind of big, thick theological textbook. And I think there has been a shift even in what we sing now, is that actually the songs that are being produced now are coming back to being quite theologically rich and deep in a slightly different way, but enabling me to speak truth. So I know for myself, when I'm wrestling, sometimes listening to a song that is full of truth helps me to remind myself of who Christ is, what Christ has done for me, that helps me to connecting with my experience that I'm going through or a struggle that I'm dealing with, to put it back into perspective or to give me a wider perspective, because I'm being lifted out of my immediate surroundings. And song does that in a way that many other forms of material don't, I think.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think that in looking at music, I got a bit lost perhaps in the cultural analysis thing. Is that a really significant point about songs is that it connects emotionally with us in a slightly different way to words that are not set to music. That's not to say that there's not emotion in words spoken and heard, but it connects in a different way, maybe you could say a deeper way or a more compelling way. Something I mentioned in the sermon, which I'm sure is true of other people, that it's not just you feel something and so you're happy to sing it because you believe it. Sometimes when you hear a song, it actually stirs you up emotionally, which makes you remember that you believe it, which then stirs further emotion.
Yep.
So it's working at a sort of complicated level. Well, I suppose simple really, but a sort of multiple level. It's not as simple as I just feel these emotions, so I'm going to sing. It stirs up emotions, which are legitimate emotions to have, but it is kind of stirring them up and helping you emotionalize. I know that's probably not a word. Emotionalize your objective beliefs in some kind of subjective emotional way. So I think that's why singing is important.
Well, it is. And actually, when you're thinking about planning a service, there should be an element whereby it's not just you're choosing songs which have deep theology attached to them, but actually the music, the tune itself should connect with where the service is. Yeah. So sometimes actually the final song or hymn can be a bit more uplifting because you're sending people out. You're kind of wanting to send them out with a sense of, right, we're going to go and we're engaged in the battle. We're reminded of the great truths of who we serve, and we're going back out into the world. And you're kind of, as it were, sending people out in that way. But there are other times that, you know, it's inappropriate where you have a time of confession, and then you kind of put on a really upbeat, feel-good song, as it were, tune words with the music. And I think some of those things are worth thinking about at times and how we plan our services, of even just the music itself attached with the words, how it connects with what you're trying to achieve or do at that point in the service. And I think some of the problems that we have often or come across is that people are coming to church and they are feeling down, and then you're singing very upbeat songs that are not connecting where they're at, or it's lifting them emotionally with the music but not necessarily with the words. Sometimes I think we need songs that reflect that more lamenting side of stuff that connects in emotionally with where people are at. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think it's true. I just think that it's quite subjective as to quite what the style of a song is, and whether it is worshipful, whether it is reflective, whether it's upbeat, downbeat.
I mean, this is one of the tricky things, isn't it? One of the interesting points, or one of the points you brought up in your sermon, was about emotional manipulation.
Yeah.
Whether that happens in churches, whether we can identify that with, and whether we should think about that. And I wondered what your thoughts, both of you, were on kind of where the church is today in terms of music. There seems to be a somewhat of a divide between churches that is somewhat music centric at times. It feels like I've been to some churches where the music is very central to what they're doing. It takes a bigger percentage of clearly like the budget and the time of the service, and it's such a big part of the worship of that service, and others where it's, you know, much more simple, much more downplayed, and they would consider that to be more worshipful or more appropriate. So how should we think about this as Christians? How should we negotiate the kind of, well, you know, the differences that there are between churches? How should we feel about that? Is it all a matter of preference?
I think it's partly a matter of preference and culture. I think what we've tried to do at Christchurch, for example, is, in a way, I hate to say it, but we try and do a kind of Radio 2 culture, Radio 2 style.
Okay.
So we kind of capture the most people. So we try and be fairly culturally relevant, but we're not trying to be absolutely leading edge.
Okay.
And I think that's in a way a good place to be, because I think it's probably appealing to the most number of people, in that it's not that you're trying to manipulate people, but that you're trying to have music that feels like it's relevant to ordinary life and not some completely eccentric subculture. And so that's why I say the kind of the Radio 2.
But at the same time, we also recognise that we have a rich tradition of hymns and music. So we want to also at times reflect that, recognising that for some of our congregation that's even more important. But also, but at the same time, it's a balance. We don't want to suddenly go all traditional hymn, because at the end of the day, they were written for a particular period of time. So you don't want to suddenly say, well, actually, we're going to go back to that, because actually that was written for that period of time and served that well. Actually, there is music today that serves this particular period of time and generation, but we're part of a wider picture. So I think all of those things are factors.
Yeah. And I think it's really hard to be totally objective about it. I was talking to some people who were new Christians recently, and trying to understand, did the music make any difference to their coming to church or becoming Christians?
Yeah.
And I think for people outside of church culture, it made somewhat of a difference. They would say, well, obviously it didn't make the difference, because it was more to do with the preaching and what I heard and, you know, God working in me. But it kind of made me feel like church wasn't so eccentric and in a culture that I couldn't possibly kind of relate to. So I think that's true. There is a counter argument to say, like on the continent, in France and other places, there's been a kind of return to very, very traditional services and people going back to church because they want kind of pipe organ music and stuff. So, you know, you can argue the thing either way. So well, I think it's not an area where you want to be absolute about it. We do our best.
At the end of the day, we're seeking to serve. we want to proclaim the gospel in the way in which it is going to reach people, and music is part of that. So we want music and songs that help to serve the gospel ultimately in discipling people and reaching people. So you have to do. So if in France you're suddenly saying that's where the culture is moving, then you'd have to want to reflect that, because you want to reach the gospel and engage people with the gospel, and you want to do that. At the same time, you don't want the culture driving what you do in the church. You've got to be theologically rooted in principle. And the principle is, actually, we sing as God's people. How you sing is going to then be a makeup of the congregation and the reflection. You know, if you have a much older congregation, you're probably not going to start introducing all the kind of guitar. Partly as well, you've got to reflect musicians in your church. You know, we're very blessed in the sense that we have a number of musicians who can play and are gifted and skillful. You know, another church may not have musicians. You know, they're having to sing along with the CD player, and there's good resources out there that enable that these days. But I think all of those factors are in mind, but singing is important.
But I think the big thing, and we're gonna have to stop this episode in just a moment, I think the really big thing is to church leaders have got to make their own decisions about what style they do. I think the main thing is to make sure that we as Christians are singing, and that we are encouraging our congregation to sing in a united way. If you're an ordinary member of a church, come along prepared to sing. Live with the fact that the songs might not be entirely to your preference, because the main thing is you're singing about God and his salvation. As church leaders, we do our best. We don't want to manipulate people, but we do want to stir up people's emotions.
Yeah.
So I think where if singing is the thing and performance singing is the thing, I think that's gone too far. But I don't think it's wrong to say we want rousing songs, and we want, you know, driving beats sometimes, and we want to feel kind of a little bit stirred up by the music as well as just other people's voices. Because I think that's part of praising God together. And I think we need to hold over to another episode talking about some of the other aspects of music and singing.
Oh, wow. Another whole episode about music.
I think so.
Brilliant. Okay.
Let's do it.
Well, you heard them. Come back next week for another episode on music. And to make sure you don't miss it, why not subscribe to The Ordinary Podcast?